And somewhere we must come to see that we must rise up and stand on our own two feet and say to our white brothers that we are determined to be men. This is what the movement is saying. We are somebody. We are determined to gain our freedom. And we are going to start with ourselves by freeing our own psyche, our own souls. This is where we've got to start first. For you see, in the final analysis, if we are going to be truly free, nobody else can do that for us. No Lincolnian Emancipation Proclamation can do that for us. No Johnsonian Civil Rights Bill can do that for us. If we are going to be truly free, we must reach down into the inner depths of our being and sign with the pen and ink of assertive manhood our own Emancipation Proclamation. I come here tonight and plead with you. Believe in yourself and believe that you're somebody. As I said to the group last night, nobody else can do this for us. No document can do this for us. No Lincolnian Emancipation Proclamation can do this for us. No Tennysonian or Johnsonian Civil Rights Bill can do this for us. If the Negro is to be free, he must move down into the inner resources of his own soul and sign with the pen and ink of self-assertive manhood his own Emancipation Proclamation. Don't let anybody take your manhood. Be proud of our heritage. As somebody said earlier tonight, we don't have anything to be ashamed of. Somebody told a lie one day. They couched it in language. They made everything black, ugly, and evil. Look in your dictionary and see the synonyms of the word black. It's always something degrading and low and sinister. Look at the word white. It's always something pure. But I want to get the language right tonight. I want to get the language so right that everybody here will cry out, yes, I'm black, I'm proud of it, I'm black and beautiful.
And welcome to On the Real Side, October the 20th, 2016. I'm Emmett Abati-Doe. Mr. Neely Fuller Jr. said, If you do not understand white supremacy, racism, what it is and how it works, everything you understand will only confuse you. On the real side is part of my mission, which is to teach my brothers and sisters how to heal from the consequences of being enslaved. And I'm a river that nurtures both banks. On the real side is dedicated to replacing white supremacy, white racism, white domination, white subjugation, with a universal system of justice. Justice is better than white supremacy. For a comment or a question, email doe@ontherealside.com or at emmettabatidoe@gmail.com. And that ain't right. No black men working. And this is endemic of what's happening nationally in America, in every major city. And I have been reluctant to present the Community Economic Development Plan as something that we can do, because it's not enough to know what the problem is. It's not enough to massage the problem to ad nauseum. My position is, and my philosophy is, if you're smart enough to know what the problem is, then you likewise should be able to come up with a reasonable, plausible solution or course of action. And that's part of my mission. And I wrote in 1993 a solution, not the solution, but a solution. And it was called the Community Economic Development Plan of 1993, in which I laid out what we could do as a community, what we could do as a family, what we can do to address the systematic, institutionalized repression of black economic development through jobs, which really means just over broke. It doesn't matter whether you're white, black, blue, green, or gray. If you've got a J-O-B, you are paid just enough not to be broke and just enough to keep you toting that barge and lifting that bale. But the Community Economic Development Plan of 1993 is a viable solution. And over the years, I have not found anyone to say it does not work, but I have not knowingly had organizations or institutions, et cetera, to employ the Community Economic Development Plan as a community solution, as a community response to a problem that's ongoing and ongrowing. So I'm going to talk about the Community Economic Development Plan, not today, but I want to direct you to where you can read it. You can go to the edcuinc.com, Economic Development Centers Unlimited.com, edcuinc.com, and scroll down, and you can read and judge for yourself whether or not if people chose to do it, would it work? Would it work? And there's reasons that we're going to be talking about a little later on in the broadcast as to why we don't do the kinds of things that can be done in the face of what we're dealing with repeatedly, generation after generation after generation. And yes, there's a reason. And we're going to be talking about that in a little bit. I think my biking while black is still a concern. And it's a concern for me here in America. But my audience is international. And I realize that I need to speak more to that international audience when I talk about That Ain't Right. So I want you to email me the things that you would like to be included in That Ain't Right. And that's Doe at ontherealside.com or at emmetabatidoe@gmail.com. And I also talk about no public restrooms, no clean, safe, well-located public restrooms. And here again is a problem that is, for the most part, an American problem. But there are cities, there are transportation systems that have included public restrooms as part of their design and part of what they offer to their riding public. But here in Houston, Texas, the leadership doesn't think that people need to go to the bathroom. And that ain't right. But on a larger level, on a bigger picture, I want to address something, especially here in America and growing in other parts of the world, is the use of paper. One of the biggest problems in waste management, in sewer treatment facilities, is not human waste. The biggest problem that they contend with is paper, toilet paper. And those who claim to be environmentally concerned and sensitive, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, or just want to stop a nasty cultural practice of wiping your behind with paper. And no matter how much you scrub your behind, when you're finished scrubbing it, you still have feces on your skin. Now, other places in the world have understood that, and they use other methods and means to clean themselves, water being the primary one. And Robert Bly, the poet, the men's movement bard, spent a month with the Maasai in Kenya. And he came back, and I'll never forget, he said, that I'll never use toilet paper again. That was what he brought back from a people, a desert people, that they did not use. They had cleaner practices. Using paper is not good hygiene, folks. And the little track box in your drawers will tell you it doesn't work. So from a standpoint of helping the environment and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, we need to stop using trees to wipe our butt and teach our children to do the same thing. And generation after generation, we continue to have a problem that causes a lot of money for the municipal system to handle the paper So if we just do that, we just graduate and learn, Google, how to take care of yourself to where when you leave the restroom, you are clean. You are clean. And not in only in your imagination. And that's got to contribute to your well-being. And it certainly will contribute to reducing the budgets of cities that are being overwhelmed with a demand for more treatment facilities, larger treatment, waste management treatment facilities. And that one thing we could do, that one thing we could learn to do, will make a major, major difference. And after you've heard this, continuing to use trees ain't right. We're going to begin a new conversation as we look at a conversation with Abati. And this conversation is going to, this is going to be part one of a conversation in understanding and healing what I'm calling PMIA, Survivor Syndrome. PMIA, understanding and healing PMIA, Survivor Syndrome. Now, what does that mean? First of all, for some of you, the term PMIA may be new. So I invite you to go to PMIA, the movie, on YouTube, On the Real Side, by Emmett Abati Doe, PMIA, the movie, and get what has been out there for a number of years. And five or six people have watched it. But it begins to focus on understanding that we're not immigrants. Those who are the direct descendants of those captured and enslaved prisoners of wars that they arrogantly call slaves are a unique people. And PMIA stands for the people made in America. PMIA. So we see all of these black people running around, and I began to have difficulty in thinking and being clear in my thoughts about all these black folks, but there's so much confusion and there's so much discord and there's so many different agendas, you know, and I had difficulty thinking. And I want you to understand, folks, that words and language is critical to your capacity and potential to solve problems. If you have a limited vocabulary, you are restricted in your problem-solving capacity, your thought capacity, your understanding capacity. And all they have to do is control the availability of words, and they can control massive numbers of people. That's why every black generation is encouraged to come up with a new language. Yes, hip-hop is a new language, just like jive was a new language and rock and roll was a new language. And every generation starts off at zero and ignores those who came before them. In fact, have difficulty communicating with those before them in this old school nonsense. This old school, new school nonsense. There's only school, boys and girls. There's only school. And we should understand that they have made learning unpleasant, unpopular, and unproductive. The biggest fools I know are walking around with degrees. And it seems that the more degrees one has, the bigger fool they are, because that's all about programming. So, PMIA, the people made in America, survivor syndrome. Now, what do I mean by survivor syndrome? First of all, I want to encourage people that are not interested in solutions, that are not interested in really delving into what's wrong with niggas. What's wrong with us? How come we keep having the same problem generation after generation after generation and can't seem to hold on to the spurts of brilliance and progress, et cetera, et cetera? How come we can't? What's wrong with niggas? And I'm proposing to you, I'm going to be presenting to you a premise, and that it rests in understanding and healing PMIA survivor syndrome. I came to this place through a very, very long journey of trying to figure ways of addressing the problem and encouraging people to kind of come to an understanding and an agreement of what needs to be done, and et cetera. And for the past 60 years or so, I found it a very non-productive pursuit, because no matter how brilliant, or no matter how plausible, or no matter how relevant or how needed, time after time after time, I see my people making the wrong choices. I see my people being led down and being willing to be misled down the wrong path, just like the Judas goats in slaughterhouses. Our leadership has been compromised for so long. They don't serve us. I mean, anybody that has a nerve to call themselves a leader should be ashamed. They should be embarrassed to call themselves a leader. They should be embarrassed to call people the pastor. You ought to be embarrassed. You ought to have enough dignity, enough self-respect to at least be embarrassed. Maybe in the quiet moments where only you and God or whoever, you know, have a conversation. I hope you're capable of being embarrassed at what you're doing and what you've been doing. By just taking a look at the condition of your flock, take a look at the condition of your congregation, take a look at the condition of your community, and see the role that you have played in perpetuating the problem generation after generation after generation after generation after generation for 30 pieces of silver. Please have the decency to be embarrassed and ashamed, and somehow, some way, make amends. Get on about the business of making amends for your treachery. We understand, and we've been supported in knowing that, for example, a woman, that's the latest thing that they're doing, is creating alienation between the sexes. They alienate women from men and men from women, because we gotta be able to get along with each other in order to solve problems, in order to address the real enemy, the real monster, the real cause of our misery is not my sister, is not my brother. And if this kind of a conversation is something you're not interested in, you need to tune out, because I'm going to be talking to my people. I'm going to be talking to the people made in America. And I want you to think, if you're not one, that they're PMIB, people made in Brazil. They're PMIC, people made in Cuba. PMIJ, people made in Jamaica. PMI. If you are part and you trace your ancestry back to the Jewish slave trade, and you're part of the diaspora, PMIA blank applies to you. But we're going to be talking and focusing on the people made in America. So we know that women can be affected for long periods of time being in an abusive relationship, for an example. And there are programs and there are all kinds of stuff going on to assist this woman to regain her, what they say is a loss of self-respect, what they say is a loss of sense of integrity, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And they got foolishness with Verizon, for example, that tells you to do this or that, and we will dedicate to, to abused and battered women. And you go into some of these dental operations and they say, give back a smile, and it's dedicated to replacing the teeth of somebody who's had their teeth knocked out, part of domestic violence, et cetera, et cetera. So I want you to understand that we know about trauma. We have been taught about the trauma that a rape victim experiences and the long road to recovery. So being affected by traumatic events is understood, except when it comes to understanding the consequence of the traumatic event that's ongoing and ongrowing, beginning with being kidnapped from our homeland, being our ancestors having been kidnapped, brutalized, and enslaved in the most violent system known to humanity. And America was perhaps the worst of the worst. And Australia. Because these two geographies were specifically used for European ruling class to get rid of their trash, the dregs of European society, the have-nots, want-not, ain't never gonna get, members of European society were given an opportunity. Yes, it was an opportunity that they could stay and continue to be niggers. The first niggers were white. And the first niggers were brutalized by other white people in power. They were exploited by other white people who had power, who had knights, who had gangs, who had thugs that enforced rules, that enforced the collection of taxes at spear point, at sword, et cetera, et cetera. So I want you to understand, I want you to know, I want you to get it, that the first niggers were white. And when they were given this opportunity to get away from their oppressors, they were sent to the so-called Americas. They were sent to Georgia, which was a penal colony. And most of the people who came here were people who had nothing to gain from remaining in Europe. Conditions were so bad in Europe that risking the voyage itself and the journey itself to get to the land of opportunity, you got to understand what's going on in these people's heads. Because this is still going on. Still going on. But we understand that what we see in how people behave toward the local community, toward the local population, is a reflection of what was done to them. There's nothing that white people have done to the Aboriginal. There's nothing that they've done to the African or the Pacific Basin population that wasn't initially done to them. They were traumatized. And these sick-ass folks became the masters through violence, through technology of the population they eventually eliminated or conquered or subdued. So what we have to understand in terms of trying to make sense of the things that don't make sense, when we look at our people and we look at the condition of our people and we look at our inability and our failure to respond effectively to problems that we're presented generation after generation, there's got to be a reason for that. There's something pathologically going on. And I'm calling it a survivor syndrome. That we have been so traumatized, and the trauma is reinforced in the new form of lynchings that's now done in uniform. The new form of Black lives don't matter, but what they're really saying is that justice doesn't matter. And justice has never mattered to a people that didn't have the ability and the power to enforce justice. Justice is not something that is extended simply because it has merit. Justice is the consequence of bringing about a penalty for injustice. And when we take a look at society, and when we take a look at, for example, how white people had to deal with the problem that they faced of being abused, misused, we have to understand that they were confronted with the same things. Let's use the Italians, for example. When the Italian wave of immigrants came to this country, let's take New York City, they were faced with people who were there before them, who had entrenched themselves. They were called natives, and they had rules, etc. They had rules for niggers, and the new niggers were the Italians. All the new niggers were the Irish. All the new niggers were the Poles or the Slavic. populations. The new niggers were always the Chinese or non-whites. So that's the reality of what they were faced with. And for you boys and girls that don't know, they were shooting and killing Irish people, whipping their asses, throwing them in jail. Drunk tanks were filled with them, forced labor, and each one had their turn. But each group eventually began to understand what they needed to do to stop the foolishness. And how the mafia came to America is that they came by invitation to solve the problem of the Italians being exploited, abused, and ripped off and killed, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And they understood that they couldn't march, that they couldn't demonstrate, that they couldn't appeal to the conscience of an Irish policeman. They couldn't appeal to the tug on the heartstrings of the native who had things rigged so that you couldn't get representation. They understood that. And force was met by force. That's how the mafia came to this country. They came as freedom fighters. And when they finished the problem and got the natives and the Irish to understand it's not a good idea to mess with the Italian community because they had soldiers protecting them, then they became parasitical. They began to feed on the community that they were asked to protect. And the rest is history. Now, the Irish had the same problem. And they formed an organization called the Molly Maguires to basically deal with the same circumstance. And through organizing themselves and having leadership. And the Irish have survived because the Irish were in Europe, the first official niggers. The Catholic Church has been very instrumental in the survival of the Italians and the Irish and other groups that they have protected and assisted with leadership that was designed to advance that population because they understood, those people in Rome understood that if they have a strong Irish population, the church is strong. If they have a strong Italian population, the church is strong. If they have anybody that's associated with Catholicism, the Roman see was strong and strengthened. Black people have never had that. We've got black clerical leadership that's designed and committed to strengthening the oppressor. And black people have not had and do not have leadership that's dedicated and will benefit from the liberation of the people made in America. Is for one reason why, and when they come up, like Marcus Garvey, Daddy Grace, Father Divine, and others, they become niche. They become niche players. They become niche players, and they are basically cocooned. Their influence is limited, or it's isolated like a virus. They see the good works of Father Divine and Daddy Grace, et cetera, as cancers. And they insulate that cancer. They allow it to exist, but they make sure that it doesn't spread. So all of these things other groups have had to contend with. And the Molly Maguires fought to protect and to advance the interest of the Irish community. There was a term called, didn't have a Chinaman's chance. If you've ever heard that expression, not having a Chinaman's chance was rooted in the fact that Chinese were contracted to come to this country. And when they were building the railroads, et cetera, they trained the Chinese to be the ones to handle the dynamite. And the life expectancy of a Chinaman in a construction project, which is how they were used and employed, was like slim to none, and like slim was out of out of town. So the term didn't have a Chinaman's chance is rooted in the exploitation and in the abuse of the Chinese population. Got it? But the Chinese, having dealt with different levels of oppression for many, many, many years, understood that they had to handle their problems. So they formed an organization called the Nungs. The Nungs were the Chinese mafia. And in every city, every major city, you have a Chinatown. How can you have a Chinatown in a country that hates everything that's non-white and oppresses everything that's non-white or subjugates everything that's non-white? And in Houston, we've got a Vietnamese town. We got, you know, blah, 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 blah. Because they had leadership and they had the ability and the capacity to fight. To fight and make it in the interest of the oppressor to cut a deal, and leave us alone. Because if you don't leave us alone, we're going to hurt you. So all of these various groups have succeeded in getting these criminals with their criminal mentality and their criminal genes to understand that you don't want to do that. We don't want to do that. And they voluntarily, on their own volition, stop the behavior until we look at PMIAs and what we see is totally contrary. We see no evidence of this being a sustained commitment. With one major glorious exception. And that was and is the glory of the Haitian people. That they rose up. They rose up, asserted themselves, and signed their own Emancipation Proclamation and became a nation that was feared, a nation that they had to hold their hostility and their hatred back for at least 75 to 100 years. Well, it's about 75 years. But for the early times of the nation state of Haiti. White people kissed their asses because they had an army that defeated every white army that came against them. Those black Haitians whooped their butts. Americans, French, you name it, English, you name it, they were sent against the Haitian people and they whooped their butts on the battlefield. But they lost the peace. They lost the peace. And what we see today is a consequence of a resolve by Europeans to destroy the Haitian spirit and to eradicate from the face of this earth the nation state of Haiti. That's what's going on. And Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton are at the forefront of this intention and the suffering and the mass murder of the Haitian people. Their blood is on the Clintons' hands to this day. And I'll restrain myself from taking that further. So as a people, we have to begin to look and begin to understand why niggas act so crazy. Because we are crazy. We've been driven crazy. We've been made mad. And I maintain that any black man that's not crazy is sick. Any black man that's not paranoid is sick. Because this environment, the air that we breathe, the water that we drink, is dedicated to our elimination, our subjugation, our repression. And part of our recovery is understanding and healing PMIA, survivor syndrome. That there's a guilt associated with being a survivor. There is a psychology of being a survivor. It's like you begin to identify with your oppressor. You begin to become one with your oppressor because you've lost yourself. We've lost our language. We've lost our religion. We've lost our geography. We've lost our culture. And yet, we must solve this problem and be the first people like the Haitians to do something that couldn't be done, to do something that was impossible. Without language, without geography, without our own God, we have to find a way toward freedom, toward self-respect that will demand others the respect that we deserve, but only if we earn it.
For my people, everywhere, singing their slave songs repeatedly, their dirges and their ditties and their blues and jubilees, praying their prayers nightly to an unknown God, bending their knees humbly to an unseen power. For my people, lending their strength to the years, to the gone years and the now years and the maybe years, washing, ironing, cooking, scrubbing, sewing, mending, hoeing, plowing, digging, planting, pruning, patching, dragging along, never gaining, never reaping, never knowing, and never understanding.
Next week, part two, a conversation with Abati, understanding PMIA, survivor syndrome. Your homework is to watch PMIA, the movie, on YouTube. And to familiarize yourself with the edcuinc.com and the Community Economic Development Plan of 1993. For On the Real Side, October the 20th, 2016, I'm Emmett Abatido.
And somewhere we must come to see that we must rise up and stand on our own two feet and say to our white brothers that we are determined to be men. This is what the movement is saying. We are somebody. We are determined to gain our freedom. And we are going to start with ourselves by freeing our own psyche, our own souls. This is where we've got to start first. For you see, in the final analysis, if we are going to be truly free, nobody else can do that for us. No Lincolnian Emancipation Proclamation can do that for us. No Johnsonian Civil Rights Bill can do that for us. If we are going to be truly free, we must reach down into the inner depths of our being and sign with the pen and ink of assertive manhood our own Emancipation Proclamation. I come here tonight and plead with you. Believe in yourself and believe that you're somebody. As I said to the group last night, nobody else can do this for us. No document can do this for us. No Lincolnian Emancipation Proclamation can do this for us. No Tennysonian or Johnsonian Civil Rights Bill can do this for us. If the Negro is to be free, he must move down into the inner resources of his own soul and sign with the pen and ink of self-assertive manhood his own Emancipation Proclamation. Don't let anybody take your manhood. Be proud of our heritage. As somebody said earlier tonight, we don't have anything to be ashamed of. Somebody told a lie one day. They couched it in language. They made everything black, ugly, and evil. Look in your dictionary and see the synonyms of the word black. It's always something degrading and low and sinister. Look at the word white. It's always something pure. High. But I want to get the language right tonight. I want to get the language so right that everybody here will cry out, yes, I'm black, I'm proud of it, I'm black and beautiful.